Welcome to Homeschool Companion, your source for information, motivation, and inspiration. If you're part of the homeschool community or simply interested in learning more about home-based education, stay tuned. Together, we'll examine the latest resources, learning styles, and teaching techniques. We'll speak with experts in the field to help you uncover every homeschool advantage. We'll also present suggestions on how to keep Christ in the curriculum as we explore fresh ways to teach and learn. Here's your Homeschool Companion host, author, educator, and children's ministry specialist, Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome, welcome. Thank you for spending this time with me. And we're going to have our devotion and prayer time. The title of our devotion is More Than Enough. Seek the Lord, inquire for Him, inquire of Him, and require Him as the foremost necessity of your life. That's Zephaniah 2:3 in the Amplified Version. If God were water, we would thirst for Him each day. If He were food, we would hunger for Him. If He were air, we would breathe Him into our lungs 12 to 20 times a minute. Yet God, our Creator, is all these things and more. If we need these basic necessities for our daily physical existence, why then do we so easily allow our spirits to starve by not opening up our Bibles? When Jesus fasted and prayed in the desert for 40 days, the devil tempted him by urging Jesus to turn stones into bread. And even though Jesus was famished, he answered, "Man shall not live by bread alone." Luke 4:4. There is more to this life than basic survival. Our bodies hunger for one thing and our spirits for another. Thankfully, God provides a daily portion for us through Scripture, which is manna for the soul. Faith check. We all have problems in this life, worries, concerns, sad situations, and important decisions to make. Most importantly, we all have questions we need the answer to. To find the answer, open your Bible and read. Feed your spirit with good soul food. Knowing the Bible is one thing. Knowing the author is another. So what are some of the ways that you get to know God? Some people can't read very well. So what are the other ways to know God? Know God through nature. Take a walk. Commune with Him. Feel His Spirit speaking to your spirit. Be still. Talk to a child. Talk to a pet. God uses all these tender earthly ties to communicate His love to us. We have so many prayer requests today, and I'm going to hold them up now. Dear Lord, thank You for this opportunity to talk about You. We know that there are many Christians throughout the world that are suffering and being persecuted because they hold true to You. Just support them. And here in North America, many of us don't hold true to You because we don't have the need. We feel more self-sufficient. Lord, be with each one of us. There are specific needs, a family that their child is suffering from cancer. Another family just lost an aunt. Be with them, Lord. Be a comfort to them. And a small nonprofit that just is looking for some providence in their ministry so they can continue on. Be with them. Most of all, Lord, we thank You for loving us. You're sovereign and You can do anything You want to do. But You know that this sin-filled earth is coming to a close, and You have said that certain things would happen, and we see them happening now. Help us all to be ready for You, Lord, to love You and to share it with our neighbors, families, and friends. All this I pray, Lord, in Thy holy name. Amen. Well, it's our arts and crafts. Ta-da! But before that, I just do want to mention that in the second half of the show, we're going to again be talking with Billy Hollowell about his book, Fault Line. And he is really putting up the argument that we're allowing our children to be educated by media, entertainment, and the educational system instead of being actively involved in it. So you're going to want to hear that. Anyway, let's go to our arts and crafts. So today we're still going to talk about some things you can do with paper plates. And the one I wanted to point out was how to make a sensory device for your child or student with a paper plate. Now, I've seen these done in a couple of ways. In this particular one, you cut out a shape of a heart, but you could just cut out the middle of the circle of two paper plates, and then using a plastic bag, you could put some kind of either sand, pebbles, potpourri, just something for them to touch and feel. And a child who is on the spectrum of autism can just have that item at their desk and they can just touch it and move the stuff around in it without creating a mess. And so it gives them a little sensory outlet. And that is the craft idea that I'm going to share with you today. Just that little sensory device. Now, if you make it with sand, then you can actually have them do letters, and they like, you know, make it an A and then jiggle it a little bit and then make a B. And so we just call it the paper plate sensory heart craft, but you could make it a circle, a box, you could do a number of these, and they love to do them. They're very simple. There's a video there that you can see. So with that being, we're going to go on to our curriculum corner. Curriculum Corner. So we're going to talk about Bible as a Reader curriculum, and it's published by Foundations for American Christian Education. The acronym for that is FACE. And in this Bible as a Reader curriculum, the Foundation for Education teaches some areas of language arts within the context of Bible study. It's pretty cool. There are 5 courses available from kindergarten through 7th grade. So as you can see, 5 and 7 don't quite match because you can integrate. There are 3 grade-specific courses for kindergarten, 1st grade, and 7th grade, but the other 2 courses can be used whatever grade level you want. So 2nd or 3rd grade for one course, and then grades 4 through 6 for another. The more you can combine, the better. And this particular course can be used for developing reading skills and at the same time teach Bible. It's kind of a thematic based, so the biblical principles are integrated along with whatever theme you're doing. And you might need to be familiar with the methodology that other FACE resources use, for example, American Dictionary of English Language, and how students look up things and the lessons that they're teaching and how it's incorporated. But I love the idea that the Bible as a reader incorporates the Bible. And the newer editions, you know, I always recommend if you can find something passed on from somebody else, but the newer editions actually go K through 12. So it's a really good overall course for Bible and language integrated together. Questions homeschooling parents ask. Well, this question is from Adam and Joyce. My daughter is 6. She'll be 7 in March. And she wants to know, is this an okay reading level for first grade? And she's doing the Step Into Reading, number 1, Toy Story 4. She had a hard time learning when we started, and nothing really started clicking until June or July. She was reading this book yesterday just because she wanted to use her new desk. She is currently on the McGuffey Eclectic Pictorial Primer, which is 2nd in the series. I just don't know how to advance her reading any more than where she's at. So with her interest in Toy Story, I got her this Step 1 reader. She has a couple of others too, but she already memorized them. This is the first time she saw this one. With her being my oldest, I'm just not sure where she should be with her reading. And at our previous church, she got picked on because she couldn't read, and she had just turned 6 at the time. I know it's only 1 page, but this is pretty average for her. Some pages are a little worse, some are a little better. Well, I think homeschooling families worry too much about reading, just like we all start walking at a different level. We do start reading. It's like the dendrites connect. And then when we go through growth spurt, the dendrites separate ever so slightly. But what we knew one day, we don't know the other. I'm talking about a child that's growing. I think it's fantastic that she's reading this at 6 years of age. But then again, I'm for starting children later rather than earlier in school. And this is probably one of the criticisms I have for homeschooling families. They often start their children way too young, like the question we had a few shows ago where they'd started homeschooling the child at the age of 3, and now he was exhibiting what I call a resistance to learning. And it is from being pushed too hard, too fast, too young, too much. Too hard, too fast, too young, and too much. Most children, if you just read a lot in front of them, will begin to want to read. And then that's half the battle. When they want to learn to read, then they'll start reading. Something that I'd recommend if you can do it would be to do Raz Kids or even ABC Mouse or ABC-ya. Those are all good digital reading things that the kids just seem to gravitate towards. And you have to limit it. But they have stuff there for preschool and first grade. And they also have ways of assessing them so you know what level they should be on. And the leveled readers are really important. But I guess that's for another curriculum topic. So I won't do a curriculum thing here where I'm answering your questions. I have a question here. Says, my 8-year-old absolutely hates going to midweek youth class. Do you force him? There is no adult service. He's 8 years old. Well, I would definitely sit with him to see what he's experiencing. And if it's you feel over his head, then hold off. 8 years old is awfully young to be sitting in a more lecture orientated type of thing. And also, when they're so young, the other kids tend to find what they do and say is funny. And so maybe he's not necessarily being picked on, but maybe he feels like he's being picked on. So I would definitely look at that. You know, it's something that you really want them to love Jesus and not force them into a midweek service. Well, that's my opinion. So with that, stay with us for the next half of the show. Hi, I'm Dr. Rose Gamblin, and I come to you each week through Homeschool Companion, and I'm so blessed to be part of MRG Media Radio Ministry, and I'm giving you the opportunity to be part of it too. We can't stay on the air without your financial support, so take a moment right now during our fundraiser to call you with a gift of any size. As a token of my appreciation for your gift, I have a gift for you, so be sure you call. And my gifts consist of some books that I've written that I've autographed for you. So be sure and call us 301-824-3162 or write to P.O. Box 413, Smithsburg, Maryland 21783. So I'm talking with Billy Holloway. He's contributed to the Washington Post, Human Events, the Daily Caller, Mediate, the Huffington Post, among other news sites. Through journalism, media, public speaking, and the biosphere, and I'll come back and ask you what you mean by that, Hollowell has worked as a journalist, a commentator for more than a decade, even though you look quite young to me. He has also appeared on Fox News, FoxNews.com Live, and the HuffPost Live, and among other outlets. Hollowell attended the College of Mount St. Vincent, Riverdale, New York, and graduated with a BA in Communications, with concentrations in broadcasting, corporate communication, and journalism, and a minor in writing. Hollowell completed his master's in social research from Hunter College in Manhattan, New York. And you can follow him on Twitter at Billy Hollowell, or you can go to his website, Hallowell, and that's spelled like Hall, O-well, H-A-L-L-O-W-E-L-L, faultlinebook.com. I'm here with Billy Hallowell, and we're talking about your book called Fault Line. Now, fault line kind of is a metaphor, so can you describe to us why you chose that particular title and what the analogy is?
Yeah, there's sort of like we're kind of preparing for this cultural earthquake, I think, and maybe we're already having the tremors are starting, mm-hmm. you know, where we are seeing an entire culture that is having a hard time admitting or even recognizing that there is a base of moral truth, that there is, you know, I mean, you look at the Barna Group, they've asked questions about, okay, well, what defines what is real and true? And people are saying, the majority of people are saying, oh, it's just, you know, each culture can decide for themselves what's right. Each person, well, no, that's not really how it works. Yes, you have the right to decide for yourself, right? We have that right as Americans to make whatever decision within the bounds of the law that we choose, but that doesn't change the reality of what's moral and what's true. And so we have lost that. And I think that's sort of the metaphor there of having this fault line where we really need to try to do something to stem the tide of this, because people's lives and their souls are on the line and their ability to connect with God and free speech. So let's say you're not a person of faith. I know listeners here probably are, but you know, the concern over free speech also drives a lot of this. Mm-hmm. When you're only presenting people with one side, with one option, when you're telling them in media what it means to say that something is true or right or moral, and it's only one agenda, well, you've really robbed people of the ability to choose for themselves. And you've also really done a disservice to a good chunk of the country who you're not representing.
I want to talk a little bit about Donald Trump.
I am happy to talk about Donald Trump.
So, I don't know, maybe you weren't shocked at all, but I was shocked. I was so shocked that he won, mainly because the media, I was getting my information from the media, they didn't think he was going to win either. So I didn't think he was going to win either. So just share everything you know about that.
Well, you know, and some of the media were in tears when he won practically. I was watching CBS the night of the election, and I happened to be with my parents that night, and we were all watching it together. And we were shocked by the way that journalists were reacting. We shouldn't have been, because I knew they were in absolute horror. They could not believe that this man won. And I think this points exactly. Now, look, Donald Trump, it was an elevated election. The rhetoric was elevated on all sides. There were a lot of things about it that were not good for the country, probably. But even with that, we've seen this in almost every election. There are studies that show it. There is a bias against the Republican candidate. Usually we saw that, especially with Trump. We've seen it even after Trump. He's in a war with the media, and we can have a separate discussion about whether or not some of the rhetoric is good or not. But the fact of the matter is there is a lack of fairness when it comes to addressing the Republican candidates, especially with Trump. And I mean, I've sat in a meeting with Donald Trump and about 30 other evangelicals in October, and I listened to what people had to say, and I listened to what he had to say. And so I was intrigued after that. And I've been interested to see kind of where this is going. You cannot like Trump. That's fine. You can like him. You cannot like him. But it doesn't take away the way the media have treated him. And it's a symptom of a broader problem. And I think the back and forth between the two of them, and I actually cover some of this in the book, the back and forth is a little bit problematic, because I think actually what journalists are going to do is dig their heels in and say, we don't have a bias. We don't have a problem. Donald Trump is the problem. And so to whatever level people want to embrace that as reality, they still have a problem that they need to acknowledge. And I think that problem is really a lack of, and I call it progressive privilege, because I think that progressives have enjoyed this privilege of having their ideological perspective dominate in Hollywood and in media and in universities. And because of that, they don't see it. And we spend a lot of time in this country talking about privilege and addressing privilege, and people have different views on that too. But I think ideological privilege is something we really need to take on here. And I think journalists need to be a little bit introspective in how they approach these issues and maybe think a little deeper and say to themselves, have we done a service to the American people? Have we done what we're supposed to be doing? And yes, I would say they haven't.
Yes, yes. Okay, so who are the nuns? The nuns, the nun, meaning N-O-N-E-S.
Not the N-U-N's.
Yeah. Who are the nuns?
The nuns are Americans who are atheist, agnostic, or unaffiliated. And it's a tricky thing, because we know about 1 in 5 Americans, some studies are saying it's higher than that now, are people who are nuns. They are not Christian necessarily. It doesn't mean they're atheists. The atheists love to seize on this number because they'll say, oh, look, 1 in 5 Americans are non-believers. Well, that's not really true. A very small portion of the country is atheist and agnostic. And then there's a big chunk in there of people who just don't know where they stand. They're not affiliated. And I think that's because of what we're talking about here. We have a lot of people who are being disenchanted and moved away from faith. So that group, though, among millennials is much more troubling. It's over 30% of millennials are nuns. And this is the future. I mean, these are the people who, 18 to 35-year-olds, these are going to be the future leaders. Some of them are transitioning into leadership roles now. And the fact that they hold a perspective. And look, there are lots of good evangelical and strong evangelical millennials, but doesn't change the fact that a good chunk of them and a bigger chunk than the general public are not. And we need to pay attention to that.
Yes. This is so interesting. I'm talking to Billy Hollowell about his book, Fault Line, and you can go to HollowellFaultLineBook.com to obtain the book or learn more. And the topic of the book is so important that I wish everyone would not only read it, but get it into the hands of their media and their area, get it into the hands of thought leaders, because we really... It will boil down to some serious threats, and I wanted you to give us some examples of what you feel is currently under attack as far as our freedoms.
Absolutely. I think you have situations where, and in fact, the day that we're recording this, Aaron and Melissa Klein, the bakers from Oregon who were fined $135,000 when they didn't make a cake for a gay couple. We have plenty of cases, you know, talking about and focusing on business leaders, wedding vendors who do not wish to participate in gay weddings. And this is a very sensitive issue. It's a very complicated issue. You have a battle over the First Amendment and the 14th Amendment and which should win out,
yes,
right? And should it be free speech and association or should it be equal protection? Those are great debates and discussions to have. But we are living in an era where people are confused as to why Aaron and Melissa Klein believe what they believe. Mm-hmm. They can't understand why these horrible bigots who, I mean, this is the language that people are using to describe these very nice people who were just running a business and who were not turning gay customers away because they were gay, who didn't want to participate in a gay wedding. We're lacking the ability to sort of discern and pull apart these details, you know? And so you clump it all together. And I think because of all of this and because of the lack of perspective and understanding of why Christians believe what they believe, some of our rights are under threat. And even if you don't want to embrace the fact that the rights are under threat and you think the client should have had to make the cake, the fact that the fine was $135,000 should be troubling.
Yeah.
And the fact that it was almost like the DMV fined them. I mean, it's basically a government agency that is. So there's a lot of problems here. And I think in the rhetoric and the way that we're discussing these things, but also the fact that people don't have the ability to understand the basics of why Christians believe what they believe, that should trouble us.
Yeah.
You know, so that's just one area. I mean, and I think we will see this in other areas, the Hobby Lobby case. You know, we've seen this play out in front of the courts, and there have been victories. But if we get complacent, there will be losses.
Yes. Well, we've come to the end of our show. Thank you so much for talking to us. We've been talking to Billy Hollowell about his book, Fault Line. And share with us what the subtitle is, because I don't have it right here in front of me.
It's How a Seismic Shift in Culture is Threatening Free Speech and the Next Generation.
Yes. We'll have one last thing to say, and that is God bless.
You have been listening to Homeschool Companion, a production of MRG Media. Be sure to join us on Facebook. Just type in the name Homeschool Companion. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.